Well, we are in the last week of our series on managing conflict. Over the last 5 weeks, we've learned a lot of things, I think. We've learned a lot of techniques, things like how to hold our tongues during a dispute, which can be pretty hard, and start really listening to the other person. We've talked about how to avoid some negative behaviors, like gossiping about a situation instead of confronting the person, or attributing bad will to the other person instead of assuming the best, or jumping to conclusions instead of trying to understand the real source of the conflict. We've also talked about how to make a good apology and how to avoid a bad one, how and why we should forgive others, and what to do when you're in a stubborn, deep-rooted conflict that just won't go away. If you missed any of those episodes, or if you just want to watch them again, or send them to friends, they're all on our website. Now, learning all this is great, I think, but the hard part is moving from theory to action, putting it into practice. Jesus once said that the one who listens and does not act is like a person who built a house on the ground without a foundation. That won't even last through the first storm. And I found that out the hard way last week. A young family from here, they have 3 children. They invited me out to dinner after Sunday Mass. And we had a great time until the waiter came and asked if we wanted dessert. Well, the parents were distracted momentarily, and so even though I clearly was not paying for the dinner, I said, of course, and I ordered ice cream sundaes for the kids and myself. Now, the kids up to that moment had been perfect angels, but literally seconds after consuming their ice cream, they went berserk. One of them started dancing around the table while the youngest was trying to climb the walls, and I mean literally. A lady over at the next table looked over at us disapprovingly, and the dad got upset. He glanced over at my end of the table and he said, "See, this is what happens when they get too much sugar." Well, I took that as a challenge, and without stopping to consider his point of view, I shot right back and I said, "You're the dad. You could have said no. You had veto power. You didn't say anything." Do you see what I did there? I got defensive because I thought he was blaming me for how his kids were acting. And on top of that, I didn't understand that the comment wasn't even directed towards me. See, he and his wife apparently had been having an ongoing friendly debate about the kids' intake of that powerful drug called sugar. So here I am, up here preaching all these great strategies for conflict resolution, and I ended up jumping to conclusions, assuming bad intentions, and responding defensively. It's like I broke every rule in the book. And then when the dad hustled the kids out of the restaurant to avoid further embarrassment, and I turned to his wife, and I did one more thing that I shouldn't have done. I triangulated, and I said, "What's his problem?" And she said, "Well, he has lots of problems." Finally, as if trying to check off every mistake in the handbook, I later apologized to him, but it was a rather begrudging apology. And I did not apologize for all of my bad behavior, like contradicting him in front of the kids. Now, I promise, I'm usually a great dinner guest, so don't let that dissuade you. It's just a bad night. But in my defense, you know, it's not exactly easy applying all these principles of conflict management to real life. It's hard. And sometimes things take a wrong turn. And that's why this week, in the final episode, I'd like to talk with you about how to put into action an agreement that you've come to with another person. Let's say you've had a conflict with that person. You talk it out. You have an agreement. But then you need to make sure that the agreement sticks. You know, maybe you've reached a meeting of minds, but what do you do when nothing really changes, right? The other side doesn't abide by the agreement. You know, like maybe when you've agreed to limit the kids' sugar, but then the stupid priest you've invited over to dinner blithely orders desserts all around without asking. What do you do then? Or when you've made a family decision to reduce the number of Christmas presents the kids get each year, but then grandma and grandpa just can't help themselves. Or you've agreed to a household budget, right, in an effort to save costs, reduce costs and save more money, but then your husband goes out and he buys the latest golf clubs because everybody else at the golf club has them. Or maybe someone has agreed to stop saying something that's really hurtful to you, but then they do it again. What do you do in those situations where you think you've resolved the conflict, but you really haven't? Well, that's what I want to take a look at this week. A few things that you can do when your agreement with the other person seems to be unraveling. You could think of it as troubleshooting where things took a wrong turn when trying to manage conflict. And so I just want to cover three things. The first thing to check is whether you tried to fix the problem too quickly, right? Sometimes we want to do that. We've got a problem with someone or something, and we try to fix the problem and rush into it too quickly. Maybe you drove too hard of a bargain. Maybe you ended up with an agreement that later didn't seem fair to the other person. People aren't going to abide by an unfair agreement. And so if that has happened, if you think maybe you rushed into a solution too quickly, the best thing to do is to go back and talk to that person again. But this time, try to remember a different tactic or take a different tactic. Try to separate the person from the problem. You see, a lot of times we tend to rush to a solution. We kind of steamroll people into an agreement without meaning to because we just want to get rid of the problem, which in our minds often means getting rid of the other person as quickly as possible, right? If I could just get rid of this person, this problem person, the problem will be gone. But it's not true. The problem is the problem, not the other person. So try to visualize the problem as something out here, external to you, and you and the other person are side by side trying to fix it together. Separate the problem from the person. And also make sure that the interests of everyone in the conflict are aligned as much as possible. If everybody has a stake in it, if everybody's interest is being addressed, then you have more of a chance of the agreement sticking. So the second thing to look for if your agreement with another person is falling apart is whether maybe there had been some lingering doubts, right? When you're talking to someone in a conflict and you're trying to resolve things, and you come up with a solution, the two of you, but maybe there was something in the back of your mind that you thought, I'm not sure this is really going to work. Maybe you had some doubts or some misgivings or concerns. And maybe you entered into the agreement and you thought, this is probably against my better judgment. That's happened to me a lot. I bet it's happened to you. But you didn't voice it. You didn't say anything about it. And now things aren't working out. Well, again, go back and talk to that other person, as hard as it is to talk to the person in a conflict, and say, you know, I think maybe this isn't working because of this. And I should have said this at the beginning. Maybe the other side will say, you know, I had that thought too. I had similar reservations. For instance, maybe you're talking to your spouse about, I don't know, how much sugar the kids should have. And maybe you both see eye to eye and you want to restrict the amount of ice cream or candy they can have, or your grandchildren or whatever. But maybe in the back of your mind, you thought, I'm not sure this is really feasible. You know, I'm not really sure that we can just cut out all the sugar from the kids' diet. I mean, what do you do when Uncle Father Roger comes over and he loves desserts? That's going to be a problem. So go back to the person and tell them that maybe the agreement isn't working because it wasn't feasible, and try to find another solution. The last mistake that could lead to trouble in solving a conflict, and could end up unraveling a deal is something that we hope would never happen when we're dealing with someone else, but it actually does. And that is that someone played dirty, right? The conversation itself was unfair. Maybe every time you thought you were coming to some sort of agreement, the other person just wanted one more concession. Or they started making veiled threats, or they brought up issues from the past that confused things. You might not even have been fully aware that it was happening, but you maybe had some sort of gut feeling that you were being manipulated, but you gave in anyway. The best thing to do then, when someone is sort of bullying you into an agreement, is to call it for what it is. Don't be afraid to point out the troubling behavior. You can do it respectfully. You can say, look, I think the agreement that you and I came up with about this problem isn't working because, well, frankly, I think maybe you might not have been acting in the best faith possible. Stand your ground. But if that doesn't work, always have an escape plan. You know, when you're dealing with a conflict, it's not always possible for everyone to agree. We'd like it to be that way, but it's not always possible. And in that event, it makes more sense for each person to go their separate ways respectfully. Now, your paths may cross again in the future. Never write people off. It could happen that you come in contact again, and at that time, an agreement might be possible. But realizing you always have a way out protects your power to choose and prevents you from making an unwise agreement. So those are just a couple of tips if you're having trouble making the agreement stick. But wherever you are in the process of dealing with a conflict, it's important to remember. And if there's one thing that you take away from this message series, I want it to be this, that conflict resolution is not about solving problems. It's not only about solving problems. It's not only about agreeing to effective strategies. And it's definitely not about getting what you want all the time. At the end of the day, conflict resolution is really about everyone growing closer to Christ together. The end goal of the art of Christian conflict is communion. The kind of communion we'll all have one day in heaven. In the gospel passage this week, Jesus talks about two ways of living. One way is good and one way is evil. And when you think about evil, no matter what form it comes in, it always tends to divide people. Where there is division, there is evil. There is sin. Sin scatters, separates. It comes between people. It causes divisions and it breaks communion. And when that happens, Jesus provides two strategies in the gospel reading. Tough love and nurturing love. First, he suggests an avenue of tough love. You know, sometimes you just have to confront another person when they're doing something that hurts you or that hurts themselves or their families. You just have to have the courage to say something. Here's what Jesus says in the gospel. He says, "Remove the wooden beam from your eye first. Then you will see clearly to remove the splinter from your brother's eye." Now think about that. We often interpret that as saying that you can never judge anyone. You can never correct their bad behavior. But that's not what Jesus is saying. He's saying that we have to make sure that we've looked closely at our own behavior first, and once you have corrected your own conduct, then you can and should open a healthy discussion about problems with the other person. That's kind of like tough love. Sometimes you have to call it for what it is. At other times, the path to healing and to communion may not be tough love, but it could be a kind of nurturing love. Jesus goes on in the gospel to say that a good tree does not bear rotten fruit, right? And a rotten tree does not bear good fruit. That's sort of obvious. But have you ever thought about this? A rotten tree can become a good tree. it can become a good tree with a little love. Later in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus tells a parable about a fig tree that wasn't bearing any fruit at all. It seemed dead. It was a rotten tree. And the owner wanted to chop it down. But the gardener said, "Let me cultivate the ground around it. Let me fertilize it. Let me nurture it. Let me nourish it. It may bear fruit in the future." You see, with patience and love, anything can be transformed, including troubled relationships and conflicts. After all, the Bible says in the first reading today that the fruit of a tree shows the care it has had. So there's two ways of dealing with conflict and bringing people back together. Tough love, where you call it out, or nurturing love, where you try to love people into change. And you'll have to decide that in every moment when you're facing a conflict, you have to decide which approach you're going to use. But whatever approach you use, if you approach it with love, it will always bear good fruit because it will bring people together. Wherever there is love, people are brought back together. To conclude this series, and I want to tell a really simple story about a man I met once, and it may seem like it's not much, but it's, as I think about bombs exploding over in Eastern Europe and people, average citizens, arming themselves and trying to fight back, and just the world in turmoil again, I think of this simple story as an antidote, and it helps me not feel so powerless. So let me tell it to you. When I was going to graduate school in Los Angeles, I lived in an apartment building. The entrance to the building, they had glass doors and like a big atrium, and there were two chairs in the lobby. No one ever sat in those chairs, except one man who lived in the building. He was a 94-year-old retired Superior Court judge. Everyone called him Judge. And every day, the Justice of the Peace would come down and he would sit in one of those chairs. He'd have on a baseball cap and his cane would be by him, by his side. And everyone who passed by, leaving the apartment complex, he would tell them to have a good day. He said, "Everything's going to work out. Don't worry. You're going to have a good day." And every night when people came home, he'd be there in that chair and he'd welcome people home. I could always count on his smiling face, reassuring me and making me feel loved and welcomed, no matter what had happened to me that day. But then one day, he wasn't there. I found out later that he had had a few accidents in the chair and management had asked him to stay home. And I think it broke his heart because he died shortly thereafter. And I missed him. I missed him as I passed by those empty chairs every morning and every evening. I found it remarkable that this man who once was an intellectual powerhouse, a person with enormous respect, a magistrate for whom everyone in the courtroom would stand when he entered, a public servant who had spent his career helping people resolve conflict peacefully in a court of law, did not spend his retirement writing legal arguments and lofty legal articles. He did not spend his retirement chronicling his memoirs or telling everyone stories about all the great cases that he adjudicated. Instead, he simply chose to spend his remaining days trying to make people feel loved and like they were part of a community. And I think in his own small way, Judge gave us all a small taste of heaven. That judge, ever so gently, in his own humble and simple way, reminded us all that we need to
mind the gap.